Kalu, indeed, idam, this, mahat ascharyam, great wonder, yat, which, rajaha, influenced by the mode of passion, prakriteke, whose nature, Tava of you. Vasudeve in Lord Krishna. Bhagavate, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sattva Atmane, who is situated in pure goodness. Trida, firm. Matahe, consciousness. So translation, Ovritra Sura, demons are generally conducted by the mode of passion. Therefore, what a great wonder it is that although you're a demon, you've adopted the mentality of a devotee and have fixed your mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who is always situated in pure goodness. So you can repeat, Ovritra Sura. Demons are generally conducted by the mode of passion. Therefore, what a great wonder it is that although you are a demon, you've adopted the mentality of a devotee and have fixed your mind on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudeva, who is always situated in pure goodness. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. King Indra wondered how Vritrasura could have been elevated to the position of an exalted devotee. As for Prahlad Maharaj, he was initiated by Narada Muni, and therefore it was possible for him to become a great devotee. Although he was born in a family of demons, for Vritrasura, however, Indra could not detect such causes. Therefore, he was struck with wonder that Vritrasura was such an exalted devotee that he could fix his mind without deviation upon the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, Vasudeva. So, Kalvira Mahavascharya Hum Yadraja Prakute Stitava Vasudeve Bhagavate Satvatmane Trudamataki. So, Om Gana Timurandasha Gananjana Shlakaya Chakshur Meditam Yena Tasmai Shi Gurave Namaha. So one thing you find interesting in this verse and purport is that demons are being described as being conducted by the mode of passion. But there's another type of entity that is also conducted by the mode of passion. Does anyone think about what that is? What? Varnashram system. Kshatriyas. Vaishyas, mixed modes. Vaishyas, mixed modes of passion and ignorance. And Shudras, plain old ignorance. So, of course, Brahman is there in the mode of goodness. So they're interested in self-realization, knowledge, liberation from the material world, and ultimately, devotion. And Kshatriyas, they're interested in acquiring more. Mode of passion means, so much wealth do I have today, so much more can I get tomorrow. He is my enemy, I have conquered him, I shall rejoice. This is Bhagavad Gita, of course. So just like many devotees here are thinking of migrating, right? Why are they thinking of migrating? Because so much wealth do I have here in Fiji, that I can get more wealth in New Zealand and more wealth in Australia. This is like I'm talking to the doctor, Murari Gupta there, so that's Lord Chaitanya's doctor. Anyway, so I was talking to him yesterday, I said, you really surrender, because I was speaking to one of my other doctor disciples in Australia, and anyway, I think you know who it is, it's a lady, and she was saying that she wants to move from one area of Australia to another, because one area of Australia, the doctors only make $250,000 a year, Australian dollars. In another area, they can make $400,000 or $500,000. You understand? So there's different states in Australia. In New South Wales, they don't make so much. But if they go to the Brisbane area, then the money starts rolling in. So I was thinking about that, and then I said to the doctor here, I said, you're so surrendered. I mean, here you are in Fiji, of course. You're a doctor, and you have patience. Not too much patience. A little passion. You understand patience? Is it a play on words? You know. You have patience, that means you're patient. But then, sometimes you're not patient, and so you don't have much patience. Anyways. You understand the play on words there? Yeah, yeah. So, anyway. So, and then half of his patients are free patients anyway. So I said, you've surrendered all that to work for Krishna here. That shows your great devotion and lack of the mode of passion. Because if you went to Australia, you could be really like driving a Mercedes, have one for you, one for your wife. And that would be ecstasy. No, it's not ecstasy. I mean, what's happiness anyway? I mean, you see, people who have a lot of wealth, I mean, they're generally not that happy because they're in anxiety about many things, keeping their wealth, losing their wealth. And money causes actually friction even between family members. There's this study of people who win the lottery. You know what lottery is? Lotto, you call it. They win the lottery and their whole lives become ruined. Because then everybody wants to be their friend. And it just creates friction in the family. And usually the money is gone within a very short time. So, I mean, that's the mode of passion. It's born of unlimited desires. It's like people migrate to New Zealand and after that, Australia. But they're living in such difficult situations. Little tiny houses, working day and night. No flexibility in their lives. What is the happiness, isn't it? So that's passion. All right, that's passion. More and more. So Kshatriya, anyway, so Kshatriya is conducted generally by the mode of passion, and that's just the way it is. I mean, and even if Kshatriya is not controlled by passion, after a while, by his dealing with passion, he actually has his mind influenced. And he wants to acquire more. Even like Prabhupada said, a very interesting statement, that if one goes to Lanka, he says, you become Ravana. In other words, his statement was, or similar to the Western statement, that power corrupts, money corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. So it's very hard to find someone who has a lot of opulence that is still Krishna conscious. Of course, you do have certain people like that. I'm not saying we don't. I mean, in ISKCON, for example, we have our Ambarish Prabhu, who is the great-grandson of Henry Ford. You've heard of Henry Ford? He's the founder of Acharya, the Ford Motor Company. And he's so humble, such a humble devotee. You would think, you know, he's very wealthy. You would think that he has people fanning him, you know, women feeding him grapes all day long. Like you see in the Bollywood movies, right? All the kings, they have all these young girls fanning them. And so, but he's a very humble devotee, and he's given everything to build the temple in Mayapur. So So that's actually a unique situation. But generally someone in power or prestige becomes enamored by that, and it spoils their spiritual lives. I mean, let's take the example of a great Kshatriya, Vishvamitra, before he became the Muni, that once upon a time, he came to the ashram of Vashishtha Muni. And Vashishtha Muni had this very nice cow called a Kama Dhenu. And Vashishtha Muni said to Vishvamitra that I want to entertain your whole army. And Vishvamitra said, no, that's not possible. I don't want to destroy your hermitage. You know, I have thousands of soldiers. You know, please, let's just go our way. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. So, but Vashishtha Muni insisted. And so Vishvamitra, king Vishvamitra, wasn't Muni then, sat down with all of his soldiers to take prasad, and this Kamadhenu was producing everything the soldiers desired. You know, the soldiers just had to think of the favorite preparation they wanted, like lanka, or I don't know what they ate at that time. And immediately out of the cow, a whole plate would come full of that particular type of prasadam. Wouldn't that be nice? You could just get anything you wanted to eat. So then they were all sitting there. And then also dancing girls came out of the cow. And the soldiers would say, wow, this is great. But then after the whole thing was over, King Vishvamitra, he said to Vashishtha, please give me your cow. And I'll exchange her for, let's say, 1,000 or 10,000 ordinary cows. And Vashishtha said no. And then he upped the ante. He said, 10 million cows, something like that. And Vashishtha kept saying, no, this cow provides me with everything I need. I'm a Brahmin. I can get ghee, any of the ingredients for sacrifice I want from this cow. And ultimately, they stole the cow. And the king stole the cow, and the cow somehow or other ran back to Vashishtha, and Vashishtha said, actually, I want you to stay. The cow's name was Nandini, the desire cow. And then the cow produced all these different soldiers from its udder and from its tail, from the rear end and everything like that. The soldiers defeated the soldiers of Vishvamitra, which is interesting, and his whole army and his sons and everybody else was defeated. And Vishvamitra got very upset, and he then undertook a series of austerities in order to become a Brahmin so he could become powerful too. But you see, originally he was a very nice king, and then all of a sudden he became polluted by the desire to acquire more and more. You understand? When one comes in contact with the objects of the senses, particularly the opulent objects of the senses, then one gets bewildered in this world, even if one has good intentions. So therefore a devotee has to be very careful. So sometimes the kings become so demoniac that the Lord has to appear to kill them all because of their dealing with the mode of passion. I mean, for example, in the Mahabharata war, we find that Bhumi is going to Lord Brahma to complain about the demoniac forces of kings that are on the earth planet, and Lord Brahma is going to Lord Vishnu on the shore of the ocean of milk, and then praying to Lord Vishnu, and then Lord Vishnu has to appear, you know, Paritranaya Sadhanam Vinashayaja Dushkutam. So the Dushkutinas, the impious persons, were actually the kings. The earth was overburdened with the demoniac force of kings. It's interesting, isn't it? So it's kings. It wasn't like just people wandering in the forest, aborigines or people like that that were demons, or rakshasas that were demons. These were the kings who become demons. You see this in the modern day and age too, that when people take power, they become so attached to power. And let's take the example of Syria, where you have this Assad who's in charge of the government. And his people want a change of government. They originally approached him in a very peaceful way. We want a change of government. And he said no. And then he's killing his practically hundreds of thousands of his citizens have been killed just because he wants to keep his power. In fact, he's using poison gas on his citizens. You know, this poison gas that causes immediate death, bleeding from all pores and portions of the body, just because he wants to maintain his power. Hellish, isn't it? And you find this attachment to power occurs. And so one has to be very careful. Therefore, you do need the Varnashram system where the Brahmanas, they control the kings with knowledge. And if necessary, they can even kill the king with mantras. And the Brahmanas are the only ones allowed to have a coup. And you understand, no one else. It's not that the ordinary citizens should have a coup. It's the Brahmanas should have a coup, the intellectual people. And they overthrow the king and they put a new king in. Now, in the history of India, there's one interesting instance where, another interesting instance, where practically all the Kshatriyas became very contaminated. This is the story of Parashuram, the warrior incarnation of the Lord. So we'll tell the story because this illustrates the point, how the kings became contaminated. So here's the story of Parashuram. Actually, first we'll start telling the story of Kartavirya Arjuna, who was the primary king at that time. Kartavirya Arjuna was actually quite a good king. In fact, he had 1,000 arms, so he had pretty much could control anything. So there's a story about Kartavirya Arjuna in the Ramayana, and also in the Bhagavatam. Yeah, this is also related in the Bhagavatam. How once upon a time, Kartavirya Arjuna was bathing in this river near his main city, which was Varhishmati, I believe. Anyway, so he was bathing in the river along with his wives, having a good time in the river. And just to play with the water, he was splashing with his 1,000 arms. And he was causing the water to go upstream instead of downstream. You understand? Downstream means the way the water normally flows, towards the ocean. So upstream means you push it in the other direction. So he was playing like that. But who happened to be upstream but our old friend Ravana? And Ravana was in the water saying prayers. He was quite a pious person. It's interesting, Ravana also had a lot of good qualities. It's not that he was a stupid idiot. Very intelligent person. Pronounced the Vedic mantras very precisely. So he was upstream saying his prayers. And when you say prayers in the river, any sacred river, India has so many sacred rivers, just like we had our Sahasra Tirtha Jal. You know what that is? That means 1,008 waters from different bodies, sacred bodies in India. Practically every river in India is a sacred river. That's because India is the land of Dharma, the land of religion. Whereas the water here, I mean, it's not that the Navo River is a sacred river, that you take the water from the Navo River and bathe the deities with it. That would be very bad. So he was bathing in the river, Ravana. And when you bathe in the river, you offer flowers to the river. And the flowers flow downstream, right? So these flowers are flowing downstream. And then downstream of where he was, there was this Kartavirya Arjuna playing with his wives, causing the water to come up. So he would offer the water flowers, and the flowers would come back at him. And Ravana was getting pretty upset with the whole thing. You know, the flowers coming back, I'm offering to the flowers, why are they coming back? And then he went to see what was happening, and he saw this Kartavirya Arjuna enjoying with his wives, and he challenged Kartavirya Arjuna to a fight. And it's interesting that even though Ravana was so powerful, he was defeated by Kartavirya Arjuna. He was actually tied up. And later on, his father, Vishravas was also father of Kubera. So Vishravas came to Kartavirya Arjuna and said, please, you know, let him go. He's my dear son. And so he let Ravana go, just like, oh, okay, get away, little insect. So later, Later on, in the Ramayana, you have Angada, who is teasing Ravana. When Ravana is bragging about himself, he's saying, I'm Ravan, the great Ravan. He said, oh, you're the same Ravan who got tied up by Kartavirya Arjuna, aren't you? You're the same Ravan who got put under the armpit of Bali and had to go around. While Bali went to all the holy places, you just had to go under his smelly armpit. And are you the same Ravana? And Ravana was getting angry and angry. Anyway, so that's Kartavirya Arjuna. He was a very powerful king. And actually he was a good king too. Not a bad king. So we're going to hear about him in a second in regard to the story of Parashuram. So here's the story of Parashuram. First I wanted to tell Kartavirya Arjuna because they're related. So Parashuram, Ram, that means Ram with the axe, basically. Lord Ram with the axe. Normally the Ram we know has a bow, right? But this is the Ram with an axe. And he appeared before the Ram with the bow. And he's an incarnation of Krishna. So, very interesting story. So once upon a time, there was a lady named Satyavati. Not the same Satyavati in the Mahabharata. A different Satyavati. And she was married to a sage named Rishika. Okay. So what happened is that she went to her husband and said, I want to have a son. And her husband said, okay, I'll prepare the sacrifice. Here's some kheer. If you drink this, you'll have a nice son. But at the same time, Satyavati's mother wanted to have a son too. So this Rishika, he had to prepare two portions of sweet rice, of kheer. So he prepared two portions of sweet rice, one for the mother. And remember, Satyavati was actually a Kshatriya. And she married Rishika, who was a Brahmin, which is allowed. Brahmanas can marry ladies of lower caste, but you can't have a lady of a higher caste marrying a man of a lower caste. It's called pratilom marriage. So these two portions of sweet rice were made. And what happened is that Satyavati's mother was thinking that Satyavati got the best sweet rice. So she said to Satyavati, let's switch, my dear daughter, Putri. And Satyavati, thinking this is all right, switched with her mother. And they both drank their sweet rices, and then Rishika came back and said, you drink your sweet rice, and then he detected that his wife had switched hers with her mother's. And her mother's sweet rice was intended to make a Kshatriya, and her sweet rice was intended to make a Brahmin son. You understand? So instead, Rishika got very angry with his wife. He says, why did you do this? You rascal. You shouldn't have listened to your mother. It's a mother-in-law story. So you shouldn't have listened to your mother, or my mother-in-law. Now you're going to give birth to a fierce Kshatriya. And she started crying at her husband's feet. You know, please, Pati, forgive me. Pati, Dave, forgive me. And he said, I'll half forgive you. Your son can be a Brahmin, but his son will be a fierce Kshatriya, your grandson, in other words. So she gave birth to this person named Jamadagni. And Jamadagni married a lady named Renuka. And so anyway, so they had some children. And one of those children was named Parashuram. And he was a very fierce personality. I mean, he liked to carry around an axe. And he had this like Kshatriya, not quite Kshatriya mentality, but just very fierce. He was also Brahmin, a fierce mentality. So then what happened is that Kartavirya Arjuna, along with his sons, was touring the kingdom. And then he saw that Jamadagni had this Kamadhenu. It's also Kamadhenu. Kamadhenu means like a desire cow that can produce any amount or anything you want. It's pretty amazing. So what happened is that he said, you should give me the Kamadhanu. And he forcibly took away the Kamadhanu. So Parashuram, when he found out about that, he came back to his father's ashram. And he was so angry that he went to Varhishmati, where Kartavir Arjuna was, and he cut off all the, lopped off, that means cut off, all the 1,000 arms of Kartavir Arjuna, and eventually cut his head off. And then he went back and he gave his father the desire cow. And of course his father was very happy with him. And for some time they were living nicely. His father even tested his devotion. This is a very interesting story. That once upon a time, Jamadagni's wife, Renuka, which was Parashuram's mother, happened to become attracted to some Gandharvas. And she was actually bathing in the river, getting some water in the river, and she saw this Gandharva king, and she thought, wow, he's really handsome. Now that's not chastity. A chaste woman should never become attracted to any other man other than her husband, like Sita Devi. So Jamadagni understood that his wife had become lusty after some Gandharva. And he basically said to his sons, kill your mother. And the son said, no. And then he went to Parashuram, and he said to Parashuram, kill your mother and your brothers. And Parashuram, being an obedient son, guess what he did? He killed his mother and his brothers. He cut off their heads. But he knew, he was intelligent, he knew his father had the ability to bring them back to life. So when he did that, his father said, I'm very pleased with you. Now ask for benediction. And he said, Parashuram said, bring them back to life. So they all came back to life. So there's a happy ending to the story. So don't kill your mother or brothers unless you can bring them back to life. So anyway, interesting. Parashuram's pastimes are very interesting. So then what happened is that eventually the sons... Oh yeah, here's the story. Yeah. After Parashuram had killed Kartavir Arjuna, Jamadagni, his father, also got very upset with him and said, you know, you shouldn't kill the king. You know, whatever he is, he's in charge of the kingdom. He's protecting us all. He's keeping the thieves down. So you should just go on pilgrimage and purify yourself. I don't want to see you for a while. So Parashuram left the ashram of his father. In the meantime, the sons, there were four sons, of Kartavir Arjuna wanted to take revenge upon Parashuram for doing what he did, because he had killed Kartavir Arjuna. So Parashuram was in exile, remember that. He wasn't there. So the sons of Kartavir Arjuna came to the ashram of Jamadagni and cut off Jamadagni's head, killed him, and took the desire cow. So Parashuram, when he returned from exile, he discovered that, and he was so angry, he took his axe, and he killed, of course, the sons of Kartavir Arjuna, and then he was so angry with all the kings who had become so demoniac, he went around killing the kings 21 times. That means every time children grew up and they became new kshatriyas, he killed them all. It's pretty heavy, isn't it? So he didn't kill any ladies. The ladies were safe. And there's a reason for that, I'll tell you later on. So anyway, and he created like these lakes of blood from the kshatriyas. I mean, they were red blood. And even today, these lakes are there. They're not red anymore because the red blood corpuscles, they settle. I mean, it's so many millions of years. So he created lakes of blood from the kshatriyas that he had killed 21 times. He rid the earth of kshatriyas. So there were no more kshatriyas. And so there was a problem for the earth planet. So what happened is then, but there were kshatriya ladies. So the brahmanas were called to have children by the kshatriya ladies so there could be a new generation of kshatriyas. And so Parashuram is always on the outlook for kshatriyas becoming immersed or controlled by the mode of passion. And even the story of in the Ramayana, where Lord Ram broke Lord Shiva's bow, Parashuram appeared right after that. And Parshan was angry. He said, look, these Kshatriyas are becoming puffed up again. And then he asked, who has broken this bow? And of course, Lakshman, being younger brother of Lord Ram, was very proud of Lord Ram. He says, anybody could have broken this little bow. And my brother did it. My brother Ram. And Parashuram said, Ram, I'm Ram. Who is this Ram? I am Ram. You know, Parashuram. And Parashuram said to Lord Ramchandra, he said, if you're so proud, you see, take this bow of Lord Vishnu and see what you can do with it. And he looked up and Lord Ram already had the bow of Lord Vishnu in his hand. That's actually what the Ramayana says. Not that he didn't give the bow of Lord Vishnu to Ram. Ram already had it in his hand. And Ram had strung the bow and got ready to fire arrow. He said, Parshuram, where should I fire the arrow? You know, once the bow is drawn of Ram and the arrow is put into the bow, the arrow has to be fired. So do you want me to fire it at your highest activities, or do you want me to fire it at your ability to travel anywhere? Of course, Parashuram previously had guaranteed he wouldn't stay for a long time on the earth. So he needed that ability so that Lord Ram fired it at the pious results of the activities of Parashuram. So anyway, so the reason I'm telling the story is that kings do have a tendency, kings, and not only kings, but leaders, people who are in charge of an organization, they have a tendency to become very proud in the mode of passion. So we need a division of labor in society. We need, let's say ISKCON. Let's talk about ISKCON right now. We need managers, people to manage our ISKCON movement, and also we need brahmanas as a check and balance. Just like in any modern society, there's usually checks and balances of authority. For example, there's the judicial system, there's the executive system, which is like the president or the prime minister, and the legislative system. Most modern societies have these three systems, isn't it? You have the executive, judicial, and legislative. So, traditionally, even in the UK, they had this, they didn't really have Brahmins, but they thought that rich people were Brahmins. So they call that the House of Lords. You know, it was stupid. Thinking that rich people, because they were rich, they were naturally more intelligent or brahminical. It's actually the opposite. If you look at the history of the UK, the House of Lords was a disaster. I mean, you have to be the lords and ladies. Anyway, I think you understand. And then there's the House of Commons, which is elected. So they had a misunderstanding of how to apply the Varnashram system. Instead of putting the richest people, they should have put the most intelligent people. And generally, Brahmins aren't very rich. Generally, because Brahmins were cursed by Lakshmi to not be wealthy because you have Brigham Muni who kicked the Supreme Personality God in the chest, so they were cursed by Lakshmi. So Brahmins generally are not very rich. So we need that in the modern society, in ISKCON, and also in the governments, to have some detached people, like Chanakya Pandit and others, to advise the leaders. People who don't have any conflict of interest. That's a big word nowadays. Conflict of interest, isn't it? Conflict of interest means you have a position and you're benefiting because of your position. Let's say, I'll give you a typical example. Let's say I'm president of a particular country, and then I have the ability to increase my salary. That's a conflict of interest, isn't it? I'll say, all right, now I'm getting $500,000. I should get $1 million a year. I vote for it. So it's interesting, even in countries like America, the legislative body, the Congress, they actually vote for their own salary. It's kind of stupid, isn't it? I mean, people deciding their own salary, and that's the government now. Does it happen in Fiji too? That the legislature, generally it's like that. You should have Brahmins to determine how much someone is worth. They don't get anybody, so they can actually be equal poised. So they can say, well, this person should get this much. But Kali Yuga is so crazy that the people who should be Brahmins are controlling the money. And the Kshatriyas, there are no Kshatriyas, of course, but those who are in positions of power have basically absolute power. Okay, so this is the point. Kshatriyas and demons can be very similar, because they're both controlled by the mode of passion, which is what this verse says here. It doesn't mention Kshatriyas, but it says demons are generally conducted by the mode of passion. So Kshatriyas can become demoniac very, very easily, if they're not controlled by Brahmins. So any questions or comments? We have free will. We can decide to dance, or we can decide to die. You can dance for Krishna. What?
You have told, right? Why it happened like that? We didn't, because to control the power.
Yeah, I mean, Krishna makes the arrangements. However, we do have free will too. I mean, there's a lot of things within our control. It's not that Krishna is directly controlling everything because he allows us some control. In fact, he does control everything because he allows us to have some control. I mean, if we do something foolish like jump off the building, you don't blame Krishna for it. You know, he allows us to do foolish things, and we're the ones who respond. Otherwise, we blame Krishna for their foolish things. Let's say, this is actually a true story. Let's say one time a lady put salt in the Charanamrita. And Prabhupada took the Charanamrita. He was very angry with it, of course. And could the lady say that was Krishna's arrangement? What do you think? And Prabhupada was angry. Who is this foolish girl? And the girl would come up and say, Prabhupada, you should understand Krishna's in control of everything. And Krishna has made me put the salt in the sweet rice. Don't you see Krishna in everything and everywhere, Prabhupada? I think she would have gotten fried at that particular point. So, I mean, Prabhupada was already angry with her. So we do have the ability to act foolish. And also, there's the example I always use, that devotees got into car accidents many times, and many devotees died because the devotees were sleeping. And some devotees asked Prabhupada, was this Krishna's arrangement, Krishna's mercy? And Prabhupada said, no, it was their foolishness. So we have the ability to be foolish. You can't just say, sit back. When Krishna wants something, it's going to happen. When Krishna wants the temple to be built, it'll happen. When Krishna wants the arti to be done, it'll happen. When Krishna wants the gates, Krishna will make the gates. Why do I have to worry about it? So we do have ability. Krishna gives us limited freedom. It's not unlimited freedom. And that's Krishna giving it to us voluntarily. Krishna's ultimately in control, yes. But Krishna voluntarily gives us this voluntary freedom. I think we have to end now. Okay, all glories to His divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. Gaura Premananda, Hare Krishna.